Chapter 8. Home and its sorrows, a green valley with a brook running through it, full almost to overflowing with the late rains, overhung by low stooping willows. Across this brook a plank is thrown, and over this plank Adam Bede is passing with his undoubting step, followed close by Jip with the basket, evidently making his way to the thatched house, with a stack of timber by the side of it, about 20 yards up the opposite slope. The door of the house is open, and an elderly woman is looking out, but she is not placidly contemplating the evening sunshine, as he has been watching with dim eyes the gradually enlarging speck which for the last few minutes as he has been quite sure is her darling son Adam. Lisbeth Bede loves her son with the love of a woman to whom her firstborn has come late in life. She is an anxious, spare, yet vigorous old woman, clean as a snowdrop. Her gray hair is turned neatly back under a pure linen cap with a black band round it. Her broad chest is covered with a buff neckerchief, and below this, you see a sort of short bedgown made of blue checkered linen, tied round the waist and descending to the hips, from whence there is a considerable length of linsey-woolsey petticoat. For Lisbeth is tall, and in other points too there is a strong likeness between her and her son Adam. Her dark eyes are somewhat dim now perhaps from too much crying, but her broadly marked eyebrows are still black, her teeth are sound, and as she stands knitting rapidly and unconsciously with her work hardened hands, as he has as firmly upright an attitude as when she is carrying a pail of water on her head from the spring. There is the same type of frame, and the same keen activity of temperament in mother and son, but it was not from her that Adam got his well-filled brow, and his expression of large-hearted intelligence. Family likeness has often a deep sadness in it. Nature, that great tragic dramatist, knits us together by bone and muscle, and divides us by the subtler web of our brains, blends yearning and repulsion, and ties us by our heartstrings to the beings that jar us at every movement. We hear a voice with the very cadence of our own uttering the thoughts we despise. We see eyes so like our mother's, averted from us in cold alienation, and our last darling child startles us with the air and gestures of the sister we parted from in bitterness long years ago. The father to whom we owe our best heritage, the mechanical instinct, the keen sensibility to harmony, the unconscious skill of the modeling hand galls us, and puts us to shame by his daily errors. The long-lost mother, whose face we begin to see in the glass as our own wrinkles come, once fretted our young souls with her anxious humors and irrational persistence. It is such a fond, anxious mother's voice that you hear, as Lisbeth says, "Well, my lad, it's gone 7 by th clock. Thee delay stay till the last child's born. Thee wants thy supper, I'll warrant. Where's Seth? Gone arter some o's chaplain, I reckon? Aye, Seth's at no harm, mother, thee mayst be sure. But where's father?" said Adam quickly, as he entered the house and glanced into the room on the left hand, which was used as a workshop. "Hasn't he done the coffin for Tholer? There's the stuff standing just as I left it this morning." "Done the coffin?" said Lisbeth, following him, and knitting uninterruptedly, though she looked at her son very anxiously. "Eh, my lad, he went aft to treadlessen this forenoon, and never come back. I doubt he's got to th wagon overthrow again." A deep flush of anger passed rapidly over Adam's face. He said nothing, but threw off his jacket, and began to roll up his shirt sleeves again. "What art going to do, Adam?" said the mother, with a tone and look of alarm. "He won't no go to work again, without having thy bit o' supper?" Adam, too angry to speak, walked into the workshop. But his mother threw down her knitting, and, hurrying after him, took hold of his arm, and said, in a tone of plaintive remonstrance, "Nay, my lad, thee munna go without thy supper. There's the taters why the gravy in 'em, just as thee licks 'em. I saved 'em o' purpose for thee. Come and ha' thy supper, come." "Let me," said Adam impetuously, shaking her off and seizing one of the planks that stood against the wall. He's fine talking about having supper when here's a coffin promised to be ready at Roxon by 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, and ought to have been there now, and not a nail struck yet. My throat's too full to swallow victuals. Why, he can't get the coffin ready, said Lisbeth. He'd work thyself to death. It'd take thee all night to dot. What signifies how long it takes me? Isn't the coffin promised? Can they bury the man without a coffin? I'd work my right hand off sooner than deceive people with lies I that way. It makes me mad to think on't. I shall overrun these doings before long. I've stood enough of 'em. Poor Lisbeth did not hear this threat for the first time, and if as he had been wise she would have gone away quietly, and said nothing for the next hour. But one of the lessons a woman most rarely learns, is never to talk to an angry, or a drunken man. Lisbeth sat down on the chopping bench, and began to cry, and by the time as he had cried enough, to make her voice very piteous, she burst out into words. Nay, my lad, thee wouldst na go away, and break thy mother's heart, and leave thy feyther to ruin. Thee wouldst na home carry me to th churchyard, and thee not to follow me. I shan't rest I my grave, if I donna see thee at th last, and how's they to let thee know as I may dyin, if thee't gone a work in thy distant parts, and seth be like gone arter thee, and thy feyther not able to hold a penfer's hand shaken, besides not knowin' where thee art. Thee mun forgie thy feyther thee munna be so bitter again him. He wore a good feyther to thee afore he took to th drink. He's a clever workman, and taught thee thy trade, remember, and never gen me a blow nor so much as an ill word, no, not even in this drink. Thee wouldst na home go to the workus thy own feyther and him as was a fine growed man and handy at everything a-most as the art thyson, 25 year ago, when he was a baby at the breast. Lisbeth's voice became louder, and choked with sobs a sort of wail, the most irritating of all sounds, where real sorrows are to be borne and real work to be done. Adam broke in impatiently. Now, mother, don't cry and talk so. Haven't I got enough to vex me without that? What's THUZO telling me things as I only think too much on every day? If I did na think on them, why should I do as I do, for the sake o' keeping things together here? But I hate to be talking where it's no use. I like to keep my breath for doing istid o' talking. I know he does things as nobody else ud do, my lad. But thee delays, so hard you po' thy feyther, Adam. He thinks nothing too much to do for Seth. He snaps me up, if ever I find fault with lad. But thee't so angered why thy feyther, more nor why anybody else. That's better than speaking soft and letting things go the wrong way, I reckon, isn't it? If I wasn't sharp with him, he'd sell every bit o' stuff yard, and spend it on drink. I know there's a duty, to be done by my father, but it isn't my duty, to encourage him in running headlong to ruin. And what has Seth got to do with it? The lad does no harm as I know of. But leave me alone, mother, and let me get on with the work. Lisbeth dared not say any more, but she got up and called Jip, thinking to console herself somewhat for Adam's refusal of the supper as he had spread out in the loving expectation of looking at him while he ate it, by feeding Adam's dog with extra liberality. But Jip was watching his master with wrinkled brow and ears erect, puzzled at this unusual course of things. And though he glanced at Lisbeth when she called him, and moved his forepaws uneasily, well knowing that she was inviting him to supper, he was in a divided state of mind, and remained seated on his haunches, again fixing his eyes anxiously on his master. Adam noticed Jip's mental conflict, and though his anger had made him less tender than usual to his mother, it did not prevent him from caring as much as usual for his dog. We are apt to be kinder to the brutes that love us than to the women that love us. Is it because the brutes are dumb? Go, Jip. Go, lad. Adam said, in a tone of encouraging command. And Jip, apparently satisfied that duty and pleasure were one, followed Lisbeth into the house place. But no sooner had he licked up his supper than he went back to his master, while Lisbeth sat down alone to cry over her knitting. Women who are never bitter and resentful are often the most querulous. And if Solomon was as wise as he is reputed to be, I feel sure that when he compared a contentious woman to a continual dropping on a very rainy day, he had not a vixen in his eye of fury with long nails, acrid and selfish. Depend upon it, he meant a good creature, who had no joy, but in the happiness of the loved ones whom she contributed to make uncomfortable, putting by all the tidbits for them, and spending nothing on herself. Such a woman as Lisbeth, for example, at once patient and complaining, self-renouncing and exacting, brooding the livelong day over what happened yesterday, and what is likely to happen tomorrow, and crying very readily both at the good and the evil. But a certain awe mingled itself with her idolatrous love of Adam, and when he said, "Leave me alone," she was always silenced. So the hours passed, to the loud ticking of the old day clock, and the sound of Adam's tools. At last he called for a light, and a draught of water. Beer was a thing, only to be drunk on holidays, and Lisbeth ventured to say as she took it in, "Thy supper stands ready for thee," when he licked. "Donna thee sit up, mother," said Adam, in a gentle tone. He had worked off his anger now, and whenever he wished to be especially kind to his mother, he fell into his strongest native accent and dialect, with which at other times his speech was less deeply tinged. "LLC to father when he comes home. Maybe he wanna come at all tonight. I shall be easier, if feed I bed. Nay, I'll bide till Seth comes. He wanna be long now, I reckon." It was then past 9 by the clock, which was always in advance of the days, and before it had struck 10 the latch was lifted and Seth entered. He had heard the sound of the tools as he was approaching. "Why, mother," he said, "how is it as father's working so late? It's none o' thy feyther as is a working, he might know that well enough. If thy head worn a full o' chapelain, it's thy brother as does ivory thing, for there's never nobody else ith way to do nothing." Lisbeth was going on, for she was not at all afraid of Seth, and usually poured into his ears all the querulousness which was repressed by her awe of Adam. Seth had never in his life spoken a harsh word to his mother, and timid people always wreak their peevishness on the gentle. But Seth, with an anxious look, had passed into the workshop and said, "Addie, how's this?" "What? Father's forgot the coffin?" "Aye, lad, th old tale, but I shall get it done," said Adam, looking up and casting one of his bright keen glances at his brother. "Aye, what's the matter with thee? Thee in trouble?" Seth's eyes were red, and there was a look of deep depression on his mild face. "Yes, Addie, but it's what must be borne, and can't be helped." "Why, thee's never been to the school, then?" "School? No, that screw can wait," said Adam, hammering away again. "Let me take my turn now, and do thee go to bed," said Seth. "No, lad, I'd rather go on, now I'm in harness. Thee help me to carry it to Broxton when it's done. I'll call thee up at sunrise. Go and eat thy supper, and shut the door so as I mayn't hear mother's talk." Seth knew that Adam always meant what he said, and was not to be persuaded into meaning anything else. So he turned, with rather a heavy heart, into the house place. "Adam's never touched a bit o' victual since home he's come," said Lisbeth. "Reckon thee'st had thy supper at some o' thy Methody folks." "Nay, mother," said Seth, "I've had no supper yet." "Come, then," said Lisbeth, "but Donna he ate the taters, for Adam ull happen ate 'em if I leave 'em standin'. He loves a bit o' taters and gravy. But he's been so sore and angered, he wouldn't ate 'em, for all I'd putten 'em by o' purpose for him. And he's been a-threatenin' to go away again," she went on, whimpering, "and I'm fast sure he'll go some donnin' afore I'm up, and never let me know aforehand, and he'll never come back again when once he's gone. And I'd better never ha' had a son, as is like no other body's son for the deftness and th handiness, and so looked on by th crit folks, and tall and upright like a poplar tree, and me to be parted from him, and never see him no more. Come, mother, donna grieve thyself in vain, said Seth, in a soothing voice. He's not half so good reason to think as Adam'll go away, as to think he'll stay with thee. He may say such a thing when he's in wrath, and he's got excuse for being wrathful sometimes, but his heart 'ud never let him go. Think how he stood by us all when it's been none so easy paying his savings, to free me from going for a soldier, and turning his earnings into wood for father, when he's got plenty o' uses for his money, and many a young man like him 'ud ha' been married and settled before now. He'll never turn round, and knock down his own work, and forsake them as it's been the labor of his life to stand by. Donna talk to me about smearing, said Lisbeth, crying afresh. He sets hard on that Teddy Sorrel, as I'll never save a penny, and I'll toss up her head at's old mother. And to think as he might ha' Mary Birch, and be took partners, and be a big man why workman under him, like Mr. Birch Dolly's told me so o'er and o'er again, if it warna as he sets hard on that bit of a wench, as is o' no more use, nor the gillyflower on the wall. And he's so wise at bookin' and figurin', and not to know no better nor that. But, mother, thee knowst we can't love, just where other folks 'ud have us. There's nobody but God can control the heart of man. I could ha' wish myself as Adam could ha' made another choice, but I wouldn't reproach him for what he can't help. And I'm not sure but what he tries to overcome it. But it's a matter as he doesn't like to be spoke to about, and I can only pray to the Lord to bless and direct him. Aye, thee lays ready enough at praying, but I donna see as he gets much while I praying. Thee wantna get double earnings o' this side duel. Th Methodies LL never make thee half the man thy brother is, for all they're a making a preacher on thee. It's partly truth he speaks there, mother, said Seth, mildly. Adam's far before me, and's done more for me than I can. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.